Welcome to
Naming It, where we discuss pop culture, current events, and how they relate to the way that we live our lives, all through the lens of two black psychologists.
Naming It is dedicated to acknowledging the elephant in the room, validating the lived experience of people of color. Coming to you from the Bay Area, California, we thank you for joining us.
I'm Dr. Bedford Palmer.
And I'm Dr. Lamisha Hill. Music on Naming It is provided by Lee England Jr., the soul violinist. Good morning, evening, afternoon.
Yeah.
Welcome to Naming It.
Welcome to Naming It, y'all.
Episode number 36.
36, yo.
We in the building.
We in this building. We are always in this building, right? We in the house is what you were looking for, I think. Hey, you don't look at me like that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm cool with building. You know what I was looking for.
As long as you don't stop with that, with the period after cool in that statement. Like, I am cool. I'm just saying, because you said in the building, said the house, that's not cool. That was, I don't know what that was.
Anyway.
Yeah.
What up, y'all?
What's going on, y'all?
Hope y'all are doing well. Thanks for tuning in to Naming It. If you are a new namer, new listener, or returning listener, we appreciate y'all.
Saying, like, we should appreciate these shout-ins that we're about to do right now. What you think about that?
That sounds like a plan.
All right. So, what's your shout-in?
So, let's start out with the month of June.
Month of June?
Big things happening in the month of June. I want to say hello and what's up to the Pride contingency of UCSF. We were out in San Francisco a couple weeks ago. Could have seen us on the TV. It was a great time. Way to celebrate our LGBT community.
All right.
As an ally.
Well, you know, what about, there was other things that happened just now, too, at the same time, right? About
what else is going on in June? I'm like, I'm passing it off to you.
Well, I'm talking about Juneteenth, yo. Juneteenth.
So what is, for those that may not be aware of Juneteenth, what, can you share a little knowledge?
I mean, if you ain't aware of Juneteenth, I don't know, you know, we need to start playing that Stay Woke song for you. I don't know. Juneteenth was reportedly the time when the last person who was enslaved as an African chattel enslaved person was freed in the United States. So this is much after this is long after the
Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah, that. it happened in Texas because, you know, I don't know, Texas wanted to keep slaves longer. And so for black folks, that's really our Independence Day. So y'all are going to hear this as like this is going to come out the Monday, the 3rd of July, right? So it'll be the 4th is the next day. Nice fireworks, all that stuff. Black folks were part of the war for independence in the United States and did a huge part in that and fought. And then, you know, we get our freedom 100 years later, you know, I guess if you're cool with waiting, you know, whatever. But for me, and when I think about real independence for people, and even if you want to talk about for the whole actual country, because if we're a family, if we're a country, if we're a nation that we're all supposed to be together, then the whole country wasn't free until black folks were free. So that would be Juneteenth, would be our Independence Day nationally. Now, there is another thing that we can talk about in terms of the fact that we have this prison industrial complex that, like, basically is another way of enslaving black and brown bodies. But, you know, we should still be able to celebrate sometime, because otherwise, you know, we just be mad all the time. Like, right. I am.
So still working on moving towards a true liberation in many forms.
No, just one form. Stop enslaving black people. How about that? Stop putting us on work gangs. Stop taking away our freedom. Stop putting us in prisons. Stop doing all these things that are depriving the franchise from people who are black and brown and poor and women and all this other stuff. Like, for real, yo. Like, whoever, the man, if you listening, stop it, homie. Dang. It's been long enough. I think you're enriched. You know what I'm saying? Like, the 1%, y'all got enough money.
I'm going to rein it back in.
ain't raining nothing. I'm right here.
You are
I'm right here, yo.
So we got some more shout-ins.
I'm shouting.
Okay, you fine. Shouting, and we got some more shout-ins.
Okay, go with yours. I'm going to keep going.
So I want to just always, well, we're in the spirit of recognizing, naming it. We've been at it for almost a year. We have our one-year celebration coming up on July 27th, so you can get those tickets on Eventbrite. If you peep us on Facebook, if you can go ahead and invite some of your crew members to that party, that's going to be awesome and a great way to share the news about naming it and this lovely event. So go ahead and click invite friends on Facebook and share.
Yeah, there's a whole tool for that, y'all. Like, we're not using a euphemism. Go on to the Eventbrite and push, like Lamisha said, hit that invite friends. Don't just share it. Invite friends.
Invite friends.
There you go.
Cool. I also want to shout in to Erin Kate Escobar, a new namer. We met at the California Council for Counseling Center. I can't even say it. C-A-C-C-C-H-E. Y'all, it's a long name. But Erin is the Assistant Director for the Center of Diversity at Caltech. And there's a lovely picture of us on social media. So big up, Erin. Thank you.
On social media?
Yeah.
You got on social media?
I did get on social media.
You posted on social media?
A little late, but I did.
A little late?
Like, a little late.
Like at our one-year celebration late?
No, like, you know, a week after. It's a later gram. It's not an Instagram. It's just a later gram.
No, what I'm alluding to is the fact that Dr. Hill just discovered our social media, y'all. So look forward
goodness.
To all the posts coming out.
All the
12 months in the game, y'all. We've been doing.
Help
me. I got all these calls this last week. Can I please get the password? Can I please get the password? Why in the password? Where's the password at?
Okay. This is real. This is real. So I know it's not best security practices to have.
Don't tell them where you put. That's even worse.
I'm not telling them anything.
Just let it go. I know where you're gonna go.
You have complicated my access. You talk about
I have
access.
Not complicated it.
You made all these different passwords.
Yes, I did. I made different passwords for different things
and
because you can't have the same password.
Can you at least write it down, homie?
You did.
No.
You did.
No.
Yes, you did.
No.
You wrote down all of it, which I didn't like in the first place.
No.
You ain't supposed to write
not,
to that. You're supposed
not
to just remember them.
Down. I can't remember them because you created them. Your mind remembers them. It don't make the sense to me.
Well, you could have wrote them down, put them in a.
Anyway,
I'm
y'all.
Is,
I'm sure this is not. If y'all know what we're talking about right here, this is a struggle. The struggle is for real.
The struggle, no. I'm just happy that now.
I can't access the. I can't even get on Twitter again.
I'll give you the password for Twitter. It's just the Twitter had to change a couple times. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but you didn't share that with me.
Cause you didn't want to. You told me we had a conversation.
Look, y'all.
I'm just saying.
You want to know why Lamisha ain't on
social media? Brought to you by Dr. B.F. Palmer. That's
exactly.
All I'm saying.
You want to know why Lamisha ain't on social media? Because
that is not the reason.
Yes.
That is not the reason.
It is part of the reason. Access, friend.
You had access. You had full access.
Consistent access.
Yo. You
undermine the access when you change the password.
It's not about access. It's not even about access because if you would have been using it regularly, that's like saying, yo, I didn't vote because my voting center got moved over and I haven't voted in 10 years. So I didn't realize that the vote center is two blocks over. Everybody who came last year knew about where the voting block went. Right? Everybody knows that it's like two houses over, but you ain't been there for so long that you didn't realize. That's all I'm saying.
I will let you have the last point.
I'm just happy that
years.
You're there, you know?
Okay.
I want to see what you... I want your Your curation in our social media. You
I
know what I'm saying?
That.
You had some cool pictures, you know? You did the one with the... Where you had like the... Was it the Ray Lewis... was that where you were? Like, it was like you were next to a person, a track star. And you were...
Oh, that is the monument at San Jose State University.
To who?
I believe it is Carlos and I can't think of their names. They were the social justice activists who stood and put their fist up on the podium at the Olympics in Mexico City in 1968.
Okay.
But I don't know their names off the top of my head. I don't want to get them wrong.
Right. Right.
It's not that I don't know. I just don't want to get them wrong. Cool. Anyway, who else you want to shout in?
I want to shout in Dr. Katherine Gordon. That's at DrKatHryn GORDON on Twitter. Had a nice little Twitter conversation. She's from the Jedi Council podcast, mm-hmm. right? And they basically talk about science fiction through the lens, science fiction and fantasy and things like that through the lens of psychologists. And they go in and they talk about like how these different themes and different things that happen in terms of these sci-fi issues can either be about the characters and like different psychosis they might have, or talking about how people have looked at specific areas of fantasy and play and stuff like that and kind of come up with fake disorders. So I listened to one of their episodes that was on Dungeons and Dragons and it was cool. I learned a lot of history about the way that Dungeons and Dragons was treated. And I thought it was really cool. And she reached out cause she says she's been listening to us and she actually wanted to do a consult to see if we had talked about Dungeons and Dragons. So big ups.
No, Dr. Catherine Gordon, Lamisha can't talk about Dungeons and Dragons cause I don't know nothing about that, but maybe we can have you on the show. And y'all can talk about the parallels together.
Yeah. You don't, I'm just saying, you know.
I can't get in that conversation.
You could, you know.
Why? But I'd have to do some research.
You would. It's on, Dungeon D&D 5e. That's how you just look that up. You will have the whole manual, tell you everything about it. We can get you into a game. I'll get you a miniature. It'll be a little Lamisha miniature with like, you could be like a half elf.
Do you want to say a shout out to your friend?
Which friend?
Who made the miniature for you?
Oh, Eric.
Yeah.
Eric Livey. We did a big shout out. We had our naming it one-on-one for last week with Eric talking about how he kind of gets into his artwork, and that's a mindful activity for him. So hopefully y'all check that out. And if you haven't, go back, listen to it. Eric's a real cool guy, and he has some real nice insights about artistry, mindfulness, and like how to kind of take care of yourself through your work.
Awesome.
So, yeah, and he made this dope miniature that you can look up on social media. I put it up on the Twitter and the Facebook and all that stuff, and on Instagram, my little character, Avaron Darkar, who is let me just put it out there, because we didn't talk about this, and I didn't really have enough words for it. If you look at the picture, I want to give mad props to Eric, because what it looks like, it's illuminated by a flash. There is a flash there, but the reason that the light on the miniature looks the way it is, that's a painting effect. So one side of the miniature is lit up while the other side is dark based on the painting this dude did. Mad skills, y'all. Mad skills. Eric Livey. Y'all ain't know it. So moving on. What else we got to do? We got another shout-ins?
I think that's it for the shout-ins.
The shout-ins, that's it?
All right. So all right. I guess we're moving into what's going on.
What's going on? So what? You got to tell me the right thing. You got to use the code word.
Oh, the code word? Okay, yeah. So now we got a password code word. So this one I know.
Okay, well, hurry up, say it. Oh, come on. They waiting.
Play the jams.
All right. So go ahead. Y'all do that.
What's going on?
Hey. No.
What's going on?
You just clip that and use that for the rest of the time.
Okay, so what's going on?
So this first thing that's really popping off in social media and on the news is Trump's sexist comments, which is no surprise, but keeps getting worse. And I know, right?
I mean, it's already, they're going to hear this on the third, so I'm sure he's going to make like 10 more worse ones by the time so right now we're recording. It's the 29th of June. And you go ahead, tell them what happened today.
So my understanding is that there was do they identify as a journalist or a political commentator?
Morning show host.
Morning show host.
On MSNBC.
What's their name?
Mika. Yeah.
So apparently Mika said something that perhaps Trump didn't agree with, and he turns around and makes disparaging comments about her appearance all over Twitter.
Is that what he did? Because I could have swore. I mean, like, come on, like, let's not whitewash this. You know what I'm saying? Let's not like. I don't want to sanitize it. Mika and what's it, Joe from like the Morning Joe show. They're actually conservative. I don't know. I think Joe, I know Joe is conservative. I'm not sure about Mika, but I think it's a conservative show in the morning on MSNBC. They make jokes like other morning shows and they talk smack. And I'm sorry, but like when we're talking about 45, it's so easy, right? Like the guy is just it's just, anyway, so they talk about this guy in a negative way because he does negative things, and they're talk show personalities. They're supposed to do stuff like that. And so he comes on and tweets about this individual, this American citizen, this private person, you know, even though they're a celebrity and all that stuff, they're not a world leader. They're not like, you know, this isn't legislation. This is an entertainer who basically spoke about negatively about the guy, and he took it upon himself to make nasty, I mean, really atrocious, sexist comments about her, speaking about how she looks, speaking about like her womanhood. Like, he brings in, for some reason, he has a fixation with women and blood. You know, I don't know what that is. That there's a fetish thing going on there. Like, and I'm not talking about like salacious. I'm talking about from a psychological perspective, there's some fetishism going on with women and blood in this dude, because he makes too many comments about that, you know? And so I don't know. It's disturbing. It's really disturbing. And to have the president of the United States make a comment like that, rank intimidation, bullying. Inappropriate, non-presidential. I don't know what you want to call it. There's a lot of stuff you can call it.
There, yes, definitely non-presidential, lack of character. And I think that social media and others in journalism are really going in on this paradox, the irony that Melania Trump's platform is anti-bullying.
That was ironic from the jump, right? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. She has a lovely project, you know, to start on.
Why does it gotta be lovely? Why can't it just be hypocritical and stupid? Why? I mean, no, for real, I've been listening to this on the news, and people keep sanitizing, and they say, oh, like, they're talking about Huckabee, right? The person who's the new front for the administration, right? People keep saying she's a lovely person. Can I just put something out there?
Put it out there.
If you work for a person who forces you to lie for them, who forces you to obfuscate and to move the truth and to insult and to mislead the American people, if that is what your job is, you can't have that job, do that job, be that person doing that job, and be a lovely person, right? If you're doing something detestable, that speaks to your character. I'm tired of hearing all this stuff about, like, these folks who work for him and who work in, you know, like, these different parties that are doing bad stuff. And then suddenly we have to be like they're all good. This is not right. The Senate. In the Senate and in the House, you have to, like, use, like, gentleman and gentlewoman and my colleague and all that stuff. And that's so that people don't fight in government, even though they do.
Right.
But when we're talking about in the media, when we're talking about in the press, you don't have to do that. And when we're talking about academia, you don't have to do that. People who do bad stuff are bad people. That's how you define bad people. How else do you define bad people?
So you really think that the pleasantries of language and the various adjectives that can be used, even in a ironic, sarcastic tone, can really undermine the truth?
Well, I mean, yes. I think that... And I know you were using it sarcastically.
I'm saying they're oftentimes used as pleasantries, like we're trying to be appeasing and nice, or being sarcastic in a ironic kind of way, but in a more palatable way.
Right. I mean, people trying to be polite. Like, I mean, and that goes to this whole naming it piece, right, is about not being polite and about naming the elephant in the room, right? So... when I hear these media people talking about this, like when they use these polite terminology, one, they don't use it for everybody, right?
Well.
So if you're some kid off the street, some poor black, white, brown, whoever, impoverished person, and you do something horrible, then you're getting called an animal, you're being called a monster, you're being called the shooter, you're being called the killer, you're being called all these nasty things, right? The violent assailant, you know, all these different things that are descriptive of bad stuff. But if you put on a white collar, especially if you have white skin under it, then suddenly everybody got to be polite about stuff that you're doing. From what I understand, if you grab a woman by her genitals without her consent, that's sexual assault, right? So what are we talking about, y'all? You know, like, I'm just saying, What are we talking about? If you go out and you tell people to go violently assault people in the crowd, mm-hmm. right? That's a provocateur. That's what I heard. You know, that's an incitement of riot. That's what I heard. You know, that's at least violent. At least it's uncouth. Can we say it's uncouth?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying.
I hear you. I hear you. The language, you know, language has a big part in our emotional connection to information that's presented, right?
Yeah. But it also, I mean, like, it has a big part in that emotional connection, that piece that you're talking about, the connectivity, is being used by people in privilege, people in power, mm-hmm. in order to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. So you have to be polite to people in power. You have to be polite to the privileged folks. Otherwise, bad stuff happens to you. And that's what we're really, I feel like that's what we're seeing in the press, is that they give this big difference to mm-hmm. people based on, like, not just power, but, like, where they stand in our social hierarchy based on race, gender, and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. Because they will say racist stuff. They will say sexist stuff. They will say homophobic stuff. They will say xenophobic stuff when that person is can be objected in that way. Mm-hmm. You know? So, like, it's not that you get protected just because you get rich and powerful. President Obama was called all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, by news people mm-hmm. in prime time. You know? So, it's just...
With No Barrett and Base and Foundation.
Well, you know, I mean, he was just insulted a lot, you know? I
absolutely. Mean, like,
so it's just...
And the things that people are calling 45 on are right. legitimate. There's stuff that he's saying, you know, it's like he's the one that's putting himself out there, using these negative terms, being disparaging, being cruel, mean, not holding of the office, right?
Right.
Disrespecting it. Essentially, he's disrespecting
it. Right. It pulls us into these conversations, mm-hmm. and I do think we'd be remiss to, since we're bringing up this type of politic,
right.
to not point out that, you know, right now we're in this space where we're waiting to see if these Republicans bring back, the senators bring back this health care bill after the recess that's going to basically harm everyone in the U.S. besides, like, one little slice of 18 to 21 you know, single people, right? And I don't even know the demographic on it, but it's like a very small, specific, like, if you make this amount of money, but everybody else pretty much is going to have to pay higher premiums and have less care
access
and insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's 22 million people are about to lose coverage if these people come back with this bill and pass it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 22 million people. Like, the rate that people were uncovered by healthcare, right, before the Affordable Care Act. Thank
mm-hmm.
you. Because I don't want to call it the other thing. The Affordable Care Act was at a level that would be lower than the level of uninsured that would occur post this bill.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
You know? So, like, the whole point was to get people in mm-hmm. so that costs can go down. And then they push this thing, and I'm sorry, now I'm just on a little Bedford rant. Here we go.
That's cool.
Like, I'm just going to say this. Like, come on, y'all. Like, if you're listening and you have any wonder about, like, the issue around this because you've been listening to these Republican talking points, like, straight up, the Affordable Care Act never said that healthcare premiums would go down. It always said that it would reduce the rate at which they increase. So when you come and you hear people saying, oh, but healthcare went up, of course it went up. If you were a person who was actually paying attention to this before the mm-hmm. big debate, if you were a person who had to buy it, so if you were an adult who was, like, not necessarily getting their healthcare from work, like I was at the time, I was a grad student trying mm-hmm. to figure out all this stuff, like, healthcare prices were going up at, like, crazy percentages,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, basically it's like 2 years and 100%, something crazy like that, right?
Right.
It's just going to just double and triple. Like, they stopped that. They made it so it's going up at a rate that people can catch up with.
Right.
You know, and mm-hmm. that's what's been going on. But Republicans pretend like it's just going up. And that's just faulty. It's faulty math. It's bad statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And they just fling it on the American people because they assume American people don't like pay attention to math and don't pay attention to context and won't go look at the right. videos from before. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just it's really problematic, and there's all these distractions, but we should be out there. Hopefully over this weekend when you're listening to this, like maybe you've already been out to a resistance activity.
Please,
you've been out
snap, talking snaps to, on resist.
Yeah, like if you in California, out in Orange County or somewhere where there's Republicans who are in the House of Representatives, get out to their space and like make them uncomfortable, yo. Like make sure they understand what they're doing. If you're in the middle of America, if you're someplace else where it's red, get out there and let those reps and let those senators know that this is not okay. You know, mm-hmm. like it's not okay. Again, it is not okay for you to be a legislator who's going to legislate the uninsuring of 22 million Americans. You want to talk about back when they were the whole Tea Party and all that nonsense started? They were yelling about death panels. Yo, wasn't any with the ACA, but it looks like that Senate is about to become one.
That was Bedford's rant on the Affordable Care Act. Not the Affordable Care Act.
Well, it's about like this idea that we need to get rid of it. And like there's also the whole piece about them talking about Democrats need to be at the table. Like they're trying to act like Democrats should be at the table right now. And that's BS too. Because like they've been talking about the whole reason they want to get rid of it. I know you want to stop it, but yo, the whole reason they're trying to get rid of it is because Obama. Right. They wanted to get rid of it to make Obama fail. They didn't. This is a Republican plan from the get go. This is like Mitt Romney's care. Like what we're living in right now. They've been pushing this for years, but because a black dude basically got it through, it has to go away. So anyway, I'm done. Okay, moving on.
Moving on. So that's, where we that, at? That's what was going on.
All right. So that is. What's next?
So let's springboard into real talk.
Real talk?
Here we are. So Bedford came across this video titled "The Secret Reason We Eat Meat" by Dr. Melanie Joy, who is a social psychologist, and she presents this idea of carnism.
What the hell is carnism?
So why don't you tell me what is carnism?
I mean, so from Dr. Melanie Joy, I'm gonna be civil. So Dr. Melanie Joy basically is relating is saying that carnism is biased towards eating meat. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the base of it. So she's basically she's equating belief sets of veganism and vegetarianism with carnism is what she's coining as like people who eat meat. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to point out that there's some sort of ideological connection here. So I want to pause real quick just for the folks out there, because you're thinking, this is naming it. Why are we talking about meat and vegetarianism and all this other stuff, right? Like, here's the thing. It's not that, one, we actually, I don't care what you eat. Yo, you could be a pescatarian who eats ice cream on Sundays and never on Mondays. It doesn't matter to me. Like, and I don't think it really matters to Dr. Hill either. But like, this person, this psychologist is choosing to relate this idea of carnism to social justice terminology and words in a way that we found to be deeply appropriative. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's what I picked up. And so we'll talk about that and get into this. So as you go out there, don't be going and telling people that Dr. Hill and Dr. Palmer said that you can't be a vegetarian or a vegan.
You know, so this whole conversation is not about the any belief system about what's better, or any health conversation about, you know, meat eating versus plant-based lifestyles, et cetera. That's not the point.
Right. So let's just talk about it a little bit, right? Let's get into this. So as I was watching the video, I was having this kind of this reaction, you know, and I was noting this thing that I've noticed in other spaces as well, where I start to feel very weird about conversation that starts to kind of bring in talk that's social justice oriented towards people and use that same kind of conversation, that same kind of terminology for animals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this weird feeling because I actually really, I strongly believe that animals should have a certain, like, they should have rights. They shouldn't, we shouldn't go out and harm animals just for the hell of it. You know, mm-hmm. we shouldn't, like, go and, like, mistreat animals. Like, you have a dog, you need to take care of the dog and do all these things to make sure the dog's life is comfortable and that it's fulfilled and all these things that we can guess that the dog would hopefully want to have. But at the same time, the dog, as far as I'm concerned, the dog ain't me. You know, like, the dog is a dog. I own that dog. You know, it is what it is. It's my friend, but I have a bunch of responsibilities legally that have to come in that takes a dog, and the dog ain't going to bring no income in. So, you know what I'm saying? Unless you got, like, a cool dog like Benji or something that, you know, my dog Coffee's cool, but, she can model probably, you know what I'm saying? But it's still my money, you know, and it's real talk. She don't got no pockets.
We're not going to get into that.
Hey, you know, she don't. I can buy her some pockets.
It's going to be on Dog Wars. Okay. But I know that you're going to play a little bit for the listeners, so I don't want to ruin it. So you want to play it? I don't want to do like a spoiler alert.
Okay, so like let's play this piece.
Let's play it, and then we're going to break down some of the languages that was used.
Okay.
In other words, carnism teaches us to believe in the three ends of justification. Eating animals is normal, natural, and necessary. And of course, we've heard this all before. Slavery is normal, natural, and necessary. Male dominance is normal, natural, and necessary. Heterosexual supremacy is normal, natural, and necessary. And the myths of carnism are institutionalized. They are supported and promoted by all major social institutions, which in turn transmit them to us. So carnistic bias is embedded within the very foundations of society. And when we are born into an institutionalized system such as carnism, we internalize it. We take into ourselves both the myths and the products of carnism. Inside us, carnism creates a fog in our minds, distorting our perceptions of meat, eggs, dairy, and the animals we eat.
Okay, that's enough of that. So she goes on to talk about cognitive distortion. She breaks this whole deal down into saying that there's justification, denial, cognitive distortions, and that builds up carnism. Mm-hmm. Here's the freaking problem, guys, folks, friends, y'all,
neighbors.
And whoever's listening, all that information that she was using, all the terminology that she was using, comes from a tradition of social justice. It comes from a tradition of civil rights. It comes from activists. It comes from people who put their bodies, their careers, their lives, their money, their reputations on the line to build a certain vernacular, right? To build a certain way of talking about our social systems in order to make sure the human rights were maintained.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go in and grab that kind of language and just use it for whatever you want.
Right.
Right? Am I tripping?
So adopting a framework that is clearly laid out, that has been established, and people are still fighting and dying, right? And to, I think like you said, to, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but to draw that to the comparison of animals, it's not fitting. And so one of our neighbors, you posed this question out to the public and to our naming it community, and you wrote, what do you think about this video's argument that eating meat is a type of ism?
Right. And so, like, before we even get into the ism or into his response, so we got a response, but just to let you know what an ism is, right? An ism is just a suffix appearing on a loan word where it was used to form action nouns from verbs. So like baptism or Darwinism or despotism, right? It also fits for things like racism, sexism, classism, and all that stuff. They're descriptors. It helps you to understand that you're taking a noun and you're making it into a verb. I don't have a problem with that. You know, you can put an ism on the end of whatever you want, but what this social psychologist did is make it into a specific kind of ism that speaks towards social justice, because we talk about isms in quotation marks, right? Mm-hmm. And so she related it, if you listen to the video like you just did, to sexism, mm-hmm. to racism,
right,
to heterosexism. Like, those are specific kinds of isms that have to do with people's rights being violated. Mm-hmm. And we have to talk about them specifically and carefully. Mm-hmm. And saying that people's affinity or bias towards meat is the same as people's affinity or bias towards race, or their affinity or bias towards misogyny, right. or their affinity or bias towards heterosexist.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, it's not the same, y'all.
Right. It's almost like, I see, if I were to speak in a metaphor, it's like, you know, people are fighting and struggling to, like, come up through perhaps like a body of water, right? To, like, elevate to the surface. And that surface being like equality and justice, right? And you're swimming and you're fighting and you're struggling. And then here comes along something and it attaches itself to you because you're on your way up. You're moving up to the surface, right? You're trying to break free, to break that surface, to have that equality, and just to attach yourself blindly to something and to benefit from all of that struggle in that way. Right.
It can stay
in its own space. Right.
Well, let's talk about how they're attaching. Right. So using this terminology, I'm looking at the views on Facebook, over 5 million views. Mm-hmm. So you're wondering, like, hey, why are y'all talking about this on naming it? I mean, like, it's just one internet video, 5 million views of this video, of the using this appropriative language, which is a basis. This is a kickoff for what this person thinks of as a movement. Mm-hmm. There's other videos of the person of Dr. Whatever. I'm tired. I'm sorry.
Melanie Joy.
Yeah, thank you. She's talking about this. She's pushing this. This was her dissertation, and she's going to start making this kind of push. And it's going to take air out of our own movements. Mm-hmm. Because when you say stuff like this, when you do stuff like this, when it becomes about mm-hmm. the appropriative group, then our language doesn't matter anymore. And it's, mm-hmm. there's a particular piece about this that, like, I want to just acknowledge. I mean, like, this isn't the first time that folks have tried to equate animal rights to human rights in a way that specifically impacts people in marginalized communities, mm-hmm. right? So a while back, there was this whole movement to use, there's a, more than a movement, they actually, a group sued SeaWorld to basically say that the orcas that have been there and, you know, have been mistreated and all other pieces around that, like, should be covered by the 13th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States.
Right.
The amendment that basically was used in order to free African people who were enslaved.
Right.
Right. So whether knowingly or whether on purpose or not, they were equating these cetaceans, these really, really smart organisms that are not people, that are not humans, right, to human beings who were in bondage.
Right.
Right. Like, whatever you want to say, I don't necessarily, you know, like, this isn't, I'm not trying to argue that the orcas needed to be there or that, like, blackfish is whatever. That's a movement, and it's a just movement, mm-hmm. but it's not just for you to go in and appropriate something that was very specific about the humanity of a group of people, and then suddenly willy-nilly just throw it to other things. Like, It puts us on the same playing field. It doesn't put white people on the same playing field as orcas. It puts black people, because that law is about black people.
And that's what I'm talking about in terms of the attaching. Like, there is this piece of, like, oh, this framework fits and we're just going to attach to it. But like you said, right, that framework, when you attach something in that way, it is a pulling down. It becomes a weight, right? And it lowers the perceived experience and puts it in a downward position.
Right. I mean, like, so, like, and I think that, like, if someone was going to respond to that, they would say, well, are animals equal to people? You know, like, you're what her premise is, maybe her premise is wrong, but then maybe our premise is wrong, that animals aren't equal to us. My response to that is that for marginalized groups, one of the most common tropes for justification for why someone isn't
worthy of life.
isn't worthy, right? Isn't worthy of life, isn't worthy of like those three assumptions, right? Like mm-hmm. of worth, of competence, and of innocence, right? Mm-hmm. That whole deal is usually based on them taking our humanity away. Mm-hmm. Right? So whether you're a woman, whether you're a person of color, whether you're in the LGBTQIA communities, whether you're disabled, wherever you are, it's about you not being a person enough. Right. It's about you not being human enough. So while it might be wonderful if we were able to come into this idea of equality of life, right? Mm-hmm. That's not the context we live in. The people in power right now, the people in power who make communities that are marginalized, who cause that, the oppressing people, mm-hmm. they use the animalization of humans in order as a tool in order to oppress those humans.
And do we want to name some of those parallels?
I mean, like, they're derogatory, so I don't even know if we want to. But I mean, like, I mean, for black people, like, calling us animals and monsters and stuff. I don't want to say that stuff.
You
don't want to say,
okay.
But like, you know, because here's the reason I want to say it, because you know it. You know, everybody who's listening right now, you know what people call black people. You know what people call women. You know, you know what people call, like, people in the LGBTQIA communities. You know what they're calling folks. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to say it because you have it already in your head. So
the dehumanization
mm-hmm.
is one of the ways to promote further oppression and further degradation of humanity.
Right. So what I say is, you know, in terms of that, it's just a matter of like needing for this person and the people who are kind of going connected to this carnism idea to understand that they're actually doing harm. Because in the end, people aren't going to hear, the writ large public isn't going to hear that we should just stop eating meat. What they're going to hear is that, you know, animals and marginalized people, they're the same, and we don't care about none of them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we use that language specifically for specific reasons, and we use it very carefully. You know, you can't just willy-nilly use it. You can't just throw it out however, because it takes away power from the words.
Mm-hmm.
And we know how that works. You know, if you use something over and over and over again, it loses its meaning.
Absolutely.
So, you know what? Maybe institutionalization has something to do with the way that people eat meat. But the term, you can find a synonym for institutionalized that works a little bit better for the context that you're talking about, right? Because people, I mean, like as it is, like, it's not the same. It's not, the oppression of people is different than the mistreatment of animals.
Thank you.
Right? So that's how I feel about that.
So some other folks have some feelings, and particularly one of our namers, Angel, who is an anthropology instructor at a local community college. And he responded to the question, what do you think about this video's argument that eating meat is a type of ism, like racism, sexism, or heterosexism? And Angel wrote back and said that his issue with Dr. Joy's argument is that this video is largely built around the universalization of what is essentially a cultural taboo against eating animal meat. She appropriates the language of social justice activists to ethnocentrically condemn the dietary practices of people who don't see animals the same way she does. Angel points out that having a closer connection to animals and or the process by which they are harvested does not automatically turn people into vegetarians, right? Eating meat isn't a moral failure. It can be an element of a perfectly valid subsistence pattern. He also thinks that Dr. Joy would be on a much better footing, particularly if she insists on co-opting the language of social justice, if she's actually framing her arguments against a meat diet on an actual social justice issue surrounding the production and consumption of meat, community health effects, environmental impacts, labor exploitation, land use issues, etc. Right. So ultimately, Angel wrote, and this is just a mic drop moment, that Dr. Joy appropriates social justice language to essentially support her ethnocentric biases rather than to actually address social justice concerns surrounding industrialized meat production.
Yeah. So it is like, I mean, thank you, Angel, for putting that in for us. Next time you might want to leave us a message. I know I was messing with you, trying to get you to actually like call in, but we'll take the written word too.
Hopefully I didn't stumble too much.
No, absolutely. You put some drama on it, as Mr. Porter would have said. I think one of the pieces I want to pull out from what Angel wrote is in terms of like the pieces around making a real social justice argument, right? And this is that thing about like appropriation, right? If you want to be an ally, right, and you want to be intersectional in your allyship, right, mm-hmm. then your one cause doesn't subsume everybody else's cause in a way that's harmful, mm-hmm. you know? So there's a way to be an animal rights advocate and be a human rights advocate and not step on each other, mm-hmm. you know? There's a way that you can do that. And, like, Angel really explained that really eloquently, you know? Like, the idea that there is a real social justice argument here. Like, there's issues around, like, where cattle, like, where the cattle that we harvest for our steaks and all that stuff, where is the majority of that cattle being housed? You know, where are they being grazed? Who's being impacted by that? Mm-hmm. Who's losing things because of that? There's whole swaths of, like, South America that are, like, all cattle farms, and we've reduced rainforest based on cattle. You know, there's like issues around different kind of crops. There's issues around where money goes. There's
issues around who's working in those spaces.
Right. Right. Like, even like I was reading an article. It was talking about how and I want to look the article. I'll post it. When you're talking about like folks who are kind of living a vegan lifestyle in Western society, a lot of times there's not even a conversation about the fact that there are analogous lifestyles outside of Western society that could just be the model, mm-hmm. you know, where because there's like a bunch of different kinds of non-meat oriented, non-dairy oriented kind of dishes that you can get out there and kind of use. But instead, there's all these like Western substitute things where you have to go and use these like deeply industrialized processes, right, to make these processed fake foods, right, mm-hmm. that are super expensive and not accessible to everybody. So like contributing to food deserts, contributing to industrialization, contributing to like these factories and all these things that mm-hmm. the social justice advocate would say, no, I'm not going to try to be connected to, but you are inherently,
right,
when you could just be eating some lentils and call it a day. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it really bugs me.
Right. And do folks that naturally eat a vegan or vegetarian diet, do they put it on the same front street that I think that oftentimes gets highlighted as a upper SES, often majority culture experience, right? That there's something trendy and very white about, you know, some of these vegan, vegetarian movements.
Well, I mean, about a lot of the food movements. And mm-hmm. and again, we don't want to, you know, we're not here to disparage or to push and say, like, you know, you eat whatever you want to eat. But there's responsible ways of approaching everything. There's responsible ways. There's non-appropriative ways to do just about anything you want to do. And the main piece to that is respecting the cultures and the spaces and the context from which you get whatever you get. And if you are social, if you know about social justice language, and if you know about who made this stuff up, who came up with these words, then you would have a problem with relating it to animals. Because, again, and I'm say this again, like, the best way to dehumanize a person is to make them like an animal. So it's deeply,
yes,
deeply insulting to have this language that we contribute to, you and I contribute to, that naming it contributes to our mentors who we listed on the first episode of Name It contribute to, right? Who folks who did genius works but were marginalized because they weren't doing mainstream work. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? like, who didn't get a YouTube article, who didn't get on the front of a bunch of stuff because they were talking about healing and taking care of the people, mm-hmm. right? And then you're just going to grab this stuff and talk about and use it for your theory to enrich yourself and not doing anything for the community. In fact, possibly hurting it. I don't know what this person does outside of this right. movement. So I'm not going to say that you ain't out giving turkeys to people or whatever you out doing. What I'm saying is that this video and this philosophy and this place that you're taking inquiry to is harmful to the folks from which you're pulling your language and terminology.
Right. And there's a piece that I think culturally we hold of honoring those who have contributed, right? And I think that's something that I heard you say with a piece about, like, where does the social justice framework come from? So honoring, A, first, the framework that all this was pulled from. And then secondly, right, I think the more passion part that I heard you really, really hit on, and I hope that people could hear you, was that it does harm for the folks that have fought and died and that continue to die and be marginalized in these ways.
Right.
And that attaching animals to social justice frameworks that have been designed to further the liberation of oppressed peoples does not need to go together.
Oh.
It can be both and, but well, it doesn't have to be in that attachment way.
Well, I mean, like, you know, from a straight up, you know, if I'm going to move away from the academic and just get straight up, like, from where I'm from, like, yo, get your own stuff. Quit biting. You know, come up with appropriate, targeted terminology that fits the theory that you're talking about. Right. Coin terms that actually support the terminology you're talking about. If you think about if you want to get into the language of non-human persons, then talk in the language of non-human persons towards the needs and the context that comes within. Mm-hmm. Right. Because, yo, I'm sorry to tell you this. Like, I'm not sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. Right. Hashtag like animals right now. We can't communicate with them. You know, we can get some ideas and stuff, but we can't read cetacean. Right. We can't read the minds of whales, and we don't understand the inner workings and the wants and needs, or even whether those are understandable to us at this point. You know, that's just not where we are technology wise. Maybe one day we will be. So mostly, and I'm saying this not to downgrade, what I'm saying is that these other living entities, these other members of Animalia and all that other stuff, you know, kingdom, phylum, all that stuff, we are guessing at what they need. We are putting our human values on them every time we interact with them. So to pretend as if the same kind of language about freedom and sovereignty, right? And the idea that we can, like, put that on to these creatures that we don't know what their internal motivations are. Mm-hmm. It actually just isn't academically correct. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? It's just not academically correct to do that. Like, there's got to be a language that gets built up through a tradition to understand how humans as moral entities, right, as ethical entities, can interact with non-human persons. That is absolutely interesting. I'd love to read books on that. I'm all sci-fied out. There's actually a bunch of sci-fi discussions of this, so maybe go check that out, you know. But yo, leave our social justice language alone until I see y'all with us in the marches, and then we can talk to you about why you still need to leave the language alone. So that's all I'm saying. That's it. I'm done.
So I'm more than certain that for those that are listening, that this brought up a lot in you. And if so, we want to hear from you. Right. So give us a call at 607. You name it. That's 607-862-6348. Leave us your social media handle or your name, whatever you feel comfortable with, and join us on the conversation. And we will create maybe some more content around it.
Yeah, let's super keep that conversation coming. Like, in fact, like, yo, hit us up on Twitter at Naming It Podcasts on our Twitter site, and let us know what you think. If you disagree vehemently, let us know. Let's have this discussion. Let's have a discussion between the namers about how, you know, what social justice terminology is useful for this type of conversation and what isn't. You know, we're here and we're talking to you, but let's do this calling in that that we do. You know, this is an elephant. It's in the room. What y'all gonna do with it? Yeah. Name it. That's what's up. Product placement. Go ahead, Mr. Porter. We're putting it in there.
All right.
All right.
So that's it for our Real Talk segment.
All right.
Yeah. Is it time to wind down into our self-care tip of the week?
Did you say wind down or wind down?
Wind
You
down.
Put a D on it? Because if you put the if you didn't put the D, you put the E on it and it's wind down, that's something that we can do when we go to our 1 year celebration, right?
You're
we can
absolutely
You know what I'm saying? Because it's at a winery, it's Rosenbloom Cellars in Oakland, and you just come in, you get your Eventbrite ticket, it comes with two glasses of wine, plus you get that charcuterie, you get your you get the extra enhanced ticket, and you can get some raffle tickets that, you know, you might just get a wine club membership if you get your raffle tickets, and you come in, 27th of July, right? 7 o'clock. Come after work wearing your little snazzy suit or your snazzy tie, or you're like dressed down Thursday. I don't know what it is. You know, you got your skirt on, or you got your nice slacks, you got your like pumps or whatever. You know, do whatever you're gonna do. Show up, listen to our panelists, network with some people. You might even find a date. I'm just saying, if you're single, you should come, have wine, chill at the naming event, and you might find some woke person.
Look, you can listen to I'm gonna rein him in.
Yo, y'all should come.
I gotta. Y'all should come.
I'm unrainable.
That is very true. Maybe I will just redirect.
Redirect.
Okay.
I'll redirect.
Back into the self-care tip of the week.
It's not about wine.
It's close to wine. It's a lovely pairing.
Yes. See, I know what I'm doing. Y'all tell me you're rain me. We're talking about. I was thinking about this before we said it.
All right.
Yeah.
So our self-care tip of the week is going to be mindful eating, and this is a piece that was shared with us from James Madison University Counseling Center, and so I will read the mindfulness exercise.
All right.
So try to keep quiet during the exercise and focus all of your attention on an item, hopefully a piece of chocolate. So this is your moment. If you don't have one, pause, go get one. Or if you have some other object that's in a wrapper, you might be able to use it as a substitute. But here, the exercise is built around chocolate.
I suggest dark chocolate, sea salt, and just a little bit of olive oil.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know about the olive oil part. Yeah, is that, does that all come in a wrapper? Because we need a wrap. It has to be individually wrapped.
Okay, so that's after. So get unwrapped and do all that stuff, but save some and do what I just told you.
Well, don't. Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So a wrapped piece of chocolate. That's what you need for the exercise. If you don't have one, pause, come back to us, and here we go. So we want you to approach the exercise with an open mind and a gentle curiosity. Pick up your wrapped chocolate, but don't unwrap it yet. Place it in the palm of your hand and notice the colors and shapes on the package. Feel the weight in your hand. Pretend like you've never seen a wrapped chocolate bar before and examine it closely, touching the packaging with your fingers and feel the texture. Pay attention to any sound the wrapper makes. Examine the wrapper, noticing all of the colors. Look at the different sides of the chocolate wrapper and notice any place that the light reflects off the package, any shadows. If your mind starts to wander and think about other things, that's okay. Notice the thoughts and bring your attention back to the chocolate. Now, begin to slowly open the wrapper. Listen to the sounds of the wrapper tearing. Notice the movement of your hand, fingers, and arm muscles as you open the chocolate. You may hear other people or other noises in the room. Notice the sounds and bring your attention back to the chocolate. Raise the chocolate to your nose and smell. Slowly breathe in several times and focus on the different smells. Does smelling the chocolate trigger anything else in your body? Is your mouth watering? Are you having any thoughts? Hurry up and let me eat the darn chocolate. What's taking so long? If so, notice them and bring your attention back to just smelling the chocolate. Now, slowly take a small bite of the chocolate, but do not chew or swallow it. Notice the feeling and the taste of the chocolate in your mouth. How does it feel as it melts? Notice the taste and the sensations of the chocolate on your tongue. Move the chocolate around in your mouth. Try to notice the moment where you feel like you want to swallow. Slowly swallow the chocolate, focusing on the sensations, and notice anything lingering. How is this exercise different from your normal way of eating chocolate? We hope that it was a piece of mindfulness that you can share again and again.
All right. Mindful chocolate eating. Yeah. If we had some chocolate, we didn't have no chocolate. Dr. Hill didn't bring no chocolate with her little chocolate thing, but you know.
You know, we all the chocolate we need.
Whatever. Don't, you know what? No. Absolutely not. Don't call me an animal. Don't talk about me in terms of food. I ain't having it. No. And no. Absolutely not.
Even if, so, okay, yeah, yes. You're right. You're right. It goes back to the friendly.
Just, you know what, y'all? Be mindful. Be in the moment. Eat that chocolate. And, yeah, that's it.
Keep naming it, y'all.
That is not where we stop. What the hell was that? What the heck,
Kimmy? I'm off point. You're putting me in a tizzy over here.
I'm with it. This is what we do. We do that.
All right, that was mindful chocolate, y'all. Mindful chocolate.
What is it? I believe the children are the future. Teach them well. Let them lead the way.
What is it? It's sexual chocolate, right?
Yeah.
That's why this whole time I was like, notice the chocolate. Bring your attention back to the chocolate. I was like,
you going
to
drop the mic too?
I was just having this moment of sexual chocolate.
Get that cherry curl going. Everybody know him from around the way. He's good. There you go.
Oh my goodness. Name the movie y'all right now. Sexual Chocolate.
That's not the name of the movie.
I know it's not the name. What's of the movie.
What's the name? Do you know the name of the movie?
I know the name of the movie.
Say it.
Name it.
That's not the name of the movie. You don't know the name of the movie.
Coming to America. She doesn't know.
Okay, thank you.
I know the name of the movie.
I don't believe you. I think you looked it up on Google just now.
Just now in my mind.
I don't know what's on your computer screen. Anyway, for details about the topics mentioned in this episode, check out the website, namingitpodcast.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Naming It Podcast.
And don't forget to get your Naming It 1 year celebration tickets on Eventbrite. You can find us either on Facebook or Eventbrite. And you know what? Eventbrite always gives you that lovely option to repost and reshare on Facebook. And when you do that, make sure that you invite some of your other friends on Facebook. I mean, go to the invite and select a few extra people that you want to party with at our 1 year celebration.
Yeah, you don't want to come by yourself.
No, you don't.
Unless you want to get a date, because there's some people
you can probably date. Why?
I'm just saying, it can be that way.
Oh, my goodness.
Yo, we're going to have music.
But you don't want to talk about the relationship episode. Well, you want to make sure our 1 year celebration is about dating.
Yeah, hey, you're bringing up other stuff. It don't have nothing to do with here. Anyway, if you like what you heard, leave a review. If you want to discuss a specific topic, send us a message, tweet, and we will try to incorporate it.
Right, because Lamisha's on social media now.
Finally. And where can they find you and you'll finally start responding?
You can find me on Twitter at Lamisha Hill, and you can find me on Instagram at Lamisha.Hill. I noticed that's a little bit different.
It is different.
Well, y'all can still find me.
Lamisha.Hill. I'm at DRBF Palmer. My stuff is consistent across, you know, all the stuff. So, you know,
look,
a little bit more savvy. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Look, you know?
But we can find us both now at Naming It. Naming It Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. So that's cool because you're using it now.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And as always, we want to give a special shout out and a big thank you to Music on Naming It provided by Lee England Jr. We hope y'all had fun. Hope you had a wonderful 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
Keep naming it, y'all.
Peace.